All right, welcome in. John Zanis, Bobby Manning. It's a Saturday night edition of the Garden Report, which means it's among our less well-attended shows that we do. The kids are out.
No, this one's going to be packed, John.
I don't mean the audience. I mean the Jimmys and the Joe Sways, okay. And they got to get their
the panelists.
Yeah, the hosts, the panelists. And that's that. I will say this. We don't typically do guest panelists on the Garden Report. We're not against it. So if there's anybody out there you think would jive with this group and you want to make a suggestion, we're more than happy to hear what you have to say. I'm not saying we'll necessarily do it, but I'm willing to listen. If there's any outside voices you want us to bring in, we would talk about it for sure. A couple things we want to tell you guys before we start the show.
First recommendation.
Everybody likes Gelso. He's afraid to come on. That's the reality. Okay.
We're going to need him at some point. You better get ready.
Nick misses you guys. He does. But, you know, he's got stuff going on too. Want to tell you first off, podcast is always brought to you by Athletic Greens, your one-stop shopping place for 75 high quality vitamins to help you start your day right. Use that code right there. Athletic Greens, not code. I should say, go to athleticgreens.com/garden. Free one-year supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs. And of course, Calm. Can't go wrong with Calm, right? The number one mental wellness app to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. Calm.com/garden. Receive 40% off a premium subscription. We'll tell you more about these terrific products that sponsor the Garden Report here. But first, let's talk a little bit about the game. I guess a game like this, when you enter it, and again, Celtics win this one, 117-108. The story coming into the game, Al Horford, as he's done all season long, out for the second night of a back-to-back with the quote-unquote back, whatever, stiffness, whatever they call it. But that's what he's been missing these games with. Malcolm Brogdon tweaked that hammy. This is a second straight game. Again, they're back-to-back, so it's not super shocking. You knew he'd be out a little bit here. So, you know, he was out against the Nuggets. Out again here. We'll see if he comes back. Joe Mazzulla did deem it day to day, and he'd be back sooner than later. I think missing these two games was automatic, but we'll see what happens if he can come back Monday. Jaylen Brown also out. He banged his knee late in that game doing one of those stupid walk-up plays, which I hate. But anyway, it happened. So what happens? Basically, tonight becomes one of those nights where you're like, oh, is Jason Tatum better than the entire Pistons team? And the answer, Bobby, was yes. Jason Tatum on his own is better than the entire Pistons team. And you got good contributions from some other players as well, primarily Marcus Smart. But this was the Jason Tatum show, and the Celtics ended up kind of – they had him at arm's length most of the game. I mean, there was Detroit would make some runs again, but it just felt like this was one the Celtics were not going to lose.
Yeah, and they could make up ground quick when they needed to in that first quarter. Bogdanovich was hitting them with the mid-range, and they're hitting a ton of threes. They had a giant three-point advantage for pretty much the whole first half, Detroit, that is. And the Celtics ended up making it up pretty quickly into that third quarter, just a monster third frame where Tatum got a shot going. Again, he goes 5 of 12. I was just telling you off-air that I felt like it was one of those games you've talked about where – all right, Tatum's not at his best, but he's still making a big impact on the game, and you're still going to look at his stats at the end and say, he was pretty great. Like, even though it wasn't his best game, it wasn't up to his standards, he still had a pretty great night. It was enough to win, and he just went supernova in the second half. That was just silly stuff that he was doing, especially the pull-up corner three in the right side. I saw people who were there were tweeting Jerome Allen was like basically telling the whole Pistons team to run at him on that play, and he still hit it. It's just ridiculous what he's doing on any given night now. And I keep saying this, but as much as I love him, and I've loved him, John, from the day he's come into the league, I had my doubts, and I know you did as well, about whether he could reach that top echelon, number one in the league. And if he's not there, he's very, very
close. He's number one in the league right now. He's number one in the league right now.
Giannis is right there. Curry's doing some crazy stuff, so it's a mix. But
It's close. It's funny because then Luka's always going to enter the equation. But again, Luka doesn't play the defense Tatum does. But the difference with Luka is, I mean, his usage rate is frigging insane. He literally impacts 60% of the Nuggets baskets. But
and there's probably only one guy in the world that could do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it's insane what Luka's doing. That's the four right there. Curry, Giannis, Tatum, and Luka. That's the conversation right now. And everybody else is on the outside looking in. Yeah, maybe I'm missing one. I don't think so right
now. Jokic maybe, but...
It's fine. It's on a different ballgame. I'm going to throw up this super chat. Guys, thank you for the super chats. If you send them, great. We're not going to stop you. By no means is it something we're asking for or begging for, but we really do appreciate it when you do contribute here to the Garden Report. Dirk, again, I get it, man. This is the thing. Like, I'm 100% with you here on this comment. And we've had this conversation the last 2-3 shows, right, Bobby? Like, too many threes, too many threes, too many threes. Again, I don't care if you take that many threes, if you make that many threes. And that's the thing is today they were jacking them because they didn't have the horses to get, you know, into the paint and to get where they wanted to go. So they were shooting a ton today, probably more than you would want to see, and not necessarily all quality. But again, it's just they're making them. You know, they're making them at a good enough clip where it doesn't matter. And I totally agree. It's a fun team to watch again right now.
Yeah, and Joe Mazzulla's talked about the fact that you got to be aggressive with pulling up from these spots when you're open, because he thinks that when you don't take this open space, you're going to over dribble and turn the ball over. And that's, I think, something that's played out with this roster so far. They haven't had issues with turnovers early this season. I think much of that has to do with them being pretty confident in getting those shots up here, particularly on these passing sequences. And again, tonight, pretty great stuff in terms of moving the ball, especially Tatum to the corners. You had White, I think, doing some good stuff in terms of keeping the ball moving quickly, even though he had a dreadful shooting night in this one in a spot start. Grant, I mean, the glue stuff he's doing at this point is just absurd. I mean, just another phenomenal game from him. And he doesn't have the stats that are blowing you away to start this year, but if you watch him, it's just such impressive stuff in terms of like what he's added to his game at this point on the offensive end of the floor to create, keep offensive rebounds alive. I've been impressed with him in that aspect of the game. Screening and rolling. Did you see that rolling dunk he got? I think it was off Tatum or Smart. He was great around the rim in this game, and I'm glad he got close to the basket in this one, because they need, as you said, they didn't have people that could go inside and open up that area of the floor, and he took it upon himself to do that. You obviously had some dreadful center play in this one, I thought, Blake and Vonleh. And, you know, Kornet gave them a few minutes at the end of the first, but again, this is what you're dealing with at center right now, when there's no Horford or no Rob. You're digging deep there for some production, and those guys at least played hard in this one. But I was fully prepared for this to be a letdown game, and they just blew the doors open through three very impressive performances from Tatum, Smart, and Grant.
It's impressive. And again, I mean, that's basically who you had left tonight, you know? So, like, the three guys who you can count on this team were the guys who came through, which is pretty impressive because, again, any one of them has a down night, you can't win this game. You just can't. Yeah. You can't win it with Blake Griffin playing 22 minutes. And Blake Griffin played an outstanding game for Blake Griffin. He did. For him, I thought he played fair. I thought he played well. I thought Vonleh was terrible. But at the end of the day, his minutes were effective. He ended up a plus 11 in his minutes there. He's just kind of all over the place. And Luke, I don't know what it was. I don't know why this was a game where they felt they couldn't go to him. We were talking about theoretically them starting. It just might be the Pistons just might be too athletic in the front court there, and they just thought it wasn't going to be a good matchup for him.
Yeah, your Storts and Bagleys and Durns. Yeah, so that's tough for him.
I think that's probably why. And we said it's the right matchup. Why did it work against the Nuggets? Because they don't have true big men, really super athletic guys, like a true center who can dominate him. And the matchups were fine. He came in there matching up against DeAndre Jordan's corpse, which is which is doable. But I mean, you didn't get great performances from your bench. You know, Hauser, you know, not a great shooting night for him when he was out there. Derek White had a horrible shooting night tonight. It was really the big three of Grant, Tatum, and Smart that carried the game, carried them tonight. All right, the Garden Report, as always, is brought to you by our exclusive wagering partner, BetOnline. BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs, from football and basketball this season. You will always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. Always your continued source for sports wagering information. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf games and events. So head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. It's a terrific deal. Just use that promo code CLNS50. Again, betonline.ag, you get a 50% welcome bonus with your initial deposit. Use that promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Yeah, and this was almost that game where they came down the earth from three. Pretty early, they were shooting, what, in the 20s? And then they end up getting to 37 again by the end of the game because of how great they shot in the second half there. So you're still waiting for that game where it really cools down for them and you look for those alternatives. There was a stretch there, I think in the second quarter, where Bogdanović was really hitting them from the mid-range, where I'm like, all right, he's got that counter from the mid-range that it doesn't feel like the Celtics have right now. And then the doors just blew open in that second half. And that was just awesome ball movement, great shooting. You have personnel up and down the lineup here that can knock down shots. Smart got hot, shot a lot, but ended up having a good night from three while also facilitating the way he has lately. So he ends up playing a great game. And this Detroit team, I said in the chat, like I've liked what they've been doing, but for some reason they stink this year to start. Like, I don't know if they're going for this. Obviously, Cade doesn't play in this game, but I don't know.
He played horribly in the last game, too.
One of 11, yeah. So they're probably doing that Victor thing, right? Like, they're just kind of sitting their veterans, playing their young guys extra, going to those rookies. Ivy was impressive at points in this game, but he still had a lot of control, still getting used to this league, I think. So you're basically just having Bogdanović gun it and praying for the best. And I think there was a crazy stat Grandy threw out during the game that they've been down double digits in every game they've played this year.
Yeah.
So they're horrible. And you run into them twice this week and take care of business, which is great. Because if you lost this team, even under man, you wouldn't have felt great coming out of that, especially with no Cade.
I agree. And what stinks is, like, these are the games where you sat everybody and you're like, they might. I even suggested prior to the game, I'm like, why not just punt? Just sit Tatum too. Let's get some rest here. You saw the Bucks did it the other night. They're just like, yeah, we're against, was it San Antonio?
Yes.
They're just like, yeah, we're just not going to play guys tonight. And it's fine.
The Thunder. One of those two.
You got to do that from time to time. To me, I'm always like, you know, why not just, you know, why not, you know, just have a few of those built into the schedule. Rest them all at once. And that's fine. But instead, you know, you just rolled the dice. I'm like, let's see whether, as I said at the top of the show, let's see whether Tatum could do this on his own. And he did. It was just unbelievable. And I get it. I know people in the chat are saying, I hate load management. Nobody likes load management. But again, if it's a matter of...
Who needs it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a matter of just, you know, do you want your guys burnt out? You know, like we're talking about, I mean, look at it both ways. A lot of people are like, Jason Tatum was fried at the end. You know, you can't blame him for his bad performance in the finals. He was tired. Yeah, you can't blame him, but maybe you could have done something to stave that off. That's kind of the point. If you're a team with eyes on a deep, deep, deep postseason run, you can totally take those nights and do it. But that being said, screw it. They went out there. Tatum, who's, you know, seems like he's just doesn't get tired ever. He's a freaking Iron Man. He's out there. You know, playing huge minutes, and he just did it single-handedly. And it was like old school Tatum type of game too, which is the, I'm just going to have to kind of do step backs in people's faces all night here because I'm the only one on the floor who can really create. And he did. Unreal.
He went back to the mid range too. Guys are feeding him on that shot. He makes them
all of it
going left. I thought the Pistons forced him left a ton, and he still did some good things on that side. He finishes with the right hand, but whatever. This is crazy what he's doing right now on both ends. And you talk about the sustainability of what he does, him being available every game. It never hurt. There's been a couple of times early this year there was a scare in that Grizzlies game. He turned his ankle yesterday. We totally forgot about that because he just shook it off. There's been a few moments this year where he's gotten banged up. Even tonight, he went to the locker room at one point for some reason, just ran right back out. So you think he's hurt, you think he's banged up, and then all of a sudden he's just running up and down the floor again. Even I think I saw him take a really hard fall last night, and just get up like nothing happened. So whatever he does training wise,
but
shout out to his guy Nick, who's always by him side stretching him out. Like this guy is just an Iron Man.
I know, but that's the thing is with more depth this year, you thought you could get those minutes down. He's been basically right at 36 the last 2 years, just a hair under, and he's up over 37 already this year. By contrast, someone like Giannis, who we talk about load management, and again, he's a bigger, more physical player who takes a lot more of a pounding. So trying to manage his minutes, I think, you know, makes more sense. He's been 32 a year for like three straight years. They are very careful about him not going over that mark. They really, really, really try to keep him to that if possible. So you do have to think about it with Tatum, and which is why I would not have been super pissed if they just rested him altogether in this game. But again, you went out there, he single-handedly beat the Pistons. It was a, you know, he's on a different plane of existence right now. Someone in the chat asking why Jaylen Brown didn't play. He banged his knee late in the game last night and he missed it. I don't think he's really hurt. He stayed in the game after bumping knees and he still
looked fine in the locker room. Yeah.
He was moving around fine and Bobby was there. He wasn't icing or limping or anything like that. So I'm pretty sure this was just a, yeah, let's just skip this one. You know, why get on a plane? Why have things swell up? Why do whatever? Just stay home. We'll be back in a little bit.
Yep. Quick trip to Detroit and back. There is an opportunity on Monday against the Thunder, I guess, to potentially rest Tatum after a big minute a game in this one. They pretty much needed him to play that entire second half because the Pistons were staying pretty close.
He came in early in the fourth quarter, yeah, and that was it. You know, he just
stayed. Yeah, even a short stint in that third where he's off the floor. So I wouldn't be stunned if he sat on Monday, but that hasn't been him. Like I would be stunned, I guess, to see him resting. Because have we ever really seen him do that?
No,
they've
he does
probably
not. 2 days off.
Probably staved
it
off his minutes at times. Yeah.
No, definitely not. But super, you know, just super good effort from him. We'll talk a little bit about. Hold on, 1 second. I got something playing in my background. We'll talk a little bit about Smart and Grant and how they did. And Smart, one thing I love about Smart, Bobby, is how he atoned instantly. He went into like I'm sorry mode after his goof play, and then the next like seven trips down the court, he literally everything that he did was perfect. But we'll talk about Smart in a minute. We do want to tell you about one of our sponsors here at the Garden Report, one of our longest running sponsors at the Garden Report, which is Calm, which when we first started with Calm, we all needed Calm because the Celtics were freaking us out. And we would come on here and we would just yell at each other the whole time and we'd be so stressed out. But that doesn't matter. That's how we started using it. I still use it to this day because it does keep me calm. It winds me down at the end of the night. Even when you're jacked up, you're watching a game and you're all, you know, juiced up and you need to kind of bring it down a little bit. Or you just had a long day and you just need to wind down. Calm is a really terrific product if you want to try it. I don't know whether you've done this kind of stuff before, experimented with it, but if you're interested at all, give it a try. It's the number one mental wellness app, gives you the tools to help you improve the way you feel. You can reduce stress and anxiety. And as I said, kind of wind yourself down through guided meditations, improve your focus with curated music tracks, rest and recharge with the sleep story. For children and adults, there's daily movement sessions. It's constantly updated, particularly if you go to calm.com/garden, where you'll get 40% off a premium subscription. And that just keeps updating new stuff all the time that you can check out. Once again, calm.com/garden, 40% off. It's a terrific deal, a premium subscription. 100 million people around the world already use Calm. You could be one of them too. So again, go check it out. Take advantage of this special offer, and I guarantee you will be happy. Let's talk about Marcus. acting like he's freaking Magic Johnson in an all-star game, throwing that ball off the backboard to Tatum. Granted, Tatum mistimed the jump, but I don't give a crap about that. That was a dumb play at that time in the game. It was just pointless, boneheaded. Just make the layup or just turn around and hand it to Tatum and let the scorer get his points and you get your dime and everyone gets a stat out of the deal. I don't get it. It's not fourth quarter of a blowout that you're trying to do, you know, do the fans. So whatever, I take a little dig at him and everyone gets super defensive about it. But then basically like the next seven trips down the floor, assist, three-pointer, offensive foul, blah, 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 blah. Almost every single thing that he did after that point in the game was perfect. I mean, he didn't shoot perfectly. Well, he was outstanding tonight. And outside of Tatum, I mean, like, as you said, Tatum and Grant, he was, he had a really good Marcus game, and now he's starting to stack them together. You know, after a really rough and uneven start to the season, he's piled together, Bobby, probably five of his six, you know, best performances over the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, and I dove into his stats a little bit after that Grizzlies game. He's passing more than last year. He has an even bigger ball handling responsibility than a year ago. They've kind of leaned off Tatum and particularly Brown's ball handling minutes. He's hitting Tatum and Brown pretty equally, like 15 times a game each. So he's finding those guys. That's his intent offensively. He's pass first. You know, tonight he ends up ramping up the shooting a little bit more. You would expect that in a game with Brown out. And he's, as we assumed he might, ramping up. I don't think he came into the year in the best shape. He talked about that fall he took in Montreal. I know you didn't like the way he looks. And
I almost never do. I always think he comes in not 1,000% in shape.
I think he alluded to it recently too. Yeah, like I'm kind of getting there.
It's been a few seasons where he's played his way into it. And I think he has part of the reason for those slow starts a little bit because of that. I kind of wish he wouldn't do that because.
Well, he had the ankle over the summer, right? And a couple other stuff. So I'm sure he didn't have the most active summer ever, especially after the finals.
Yeah, but at this point now you're talking about he actually had a really interesting game. At one
50 to 5 is insane.
One of his quietest games on the stat sheet that you'll see last night against Denver. But prior to that, you had the three straight double-digit assist games. You're now talking 4 out of 5 where he's had double-digit assists. And again, during that span, one turnover, two and one. Pretty freaking insane stretch here where he's been putting up really high assist numbers without, you know, without turning the ball over, which is incredible. And yeah, I know some people will be like 17 shots. Nobody likes, we've seen the numbers. It's, I think 13 is the Mendoza line for Smart. This is a night Marcus Smart had to take it because again, even though he's not the most efficient scorer, he can create his own offense. He's one of the few guys that can. And sometimes he's got to force the issue when you're down guys as they were tonight. There's really nobody else out there. Sometimes it has to fall on him. So I don't mind at all the 17 shots tonight. He could have taken 20 and we would have been fine.
Yeah, and through that Cleveland loss in overtime, he was 22% from three. He really did have a dreadful start shooting to start this year. He had that terrible one in the first Cleveland game, pretty bad one against Orlando. And then since then, he's up around 37, 38-ish since that point. So last six games here, the entirety of the win streak, really, he's been the difference, right? Like he was just dreadful to start the year through the 4-3 start. And then since then, he's given them everything he needed. And you didn't even get this from him last year in terms of double-digit assists, kind of production in a game. Like the assist totals are pretty low. I've always loved his passing. That was the biggest reason I loved the fact that they turned it over to him at point guard after the Kemba trade. But now you're actually seeing him have these like Chris Paul style games, Rondo, like the big assist totals where he's just whipping the ball everywhere.
I'll throw this. I'll put up Kess's comment here because I totally agree with this. We see the double digit number and we're like, wow. And then everybody will go on Twitter and be like, see, Marcus can pass. And then he won't do it for a while. Seeing him stack it up is great. But I totally agree here. There's no reason in this offense with the role that he's being asked to play and the way they're shooting, he shouldn't be getting 9-10 assists every single night. You know, he absolutely should because, again, when guys are hitting shots, it's that much easier to stockpile these stats and these extra assists here. The team's shooting, you know, insane, you know, 50+% or whatever their percentage has been over the last few games. And Marcus doesn't need to score on this team. So he should absolutely, you know, we've been talking for years, like, be a pass first point guard, be a pass first point guard, you know. Absolutely, he needs to be here. His shots should always be in the 6, 7, 8 range, and he should be just dishing. And every once in a while, yeah, maybe the shots tick up just because he gets a lot of open looks. But I totally agree. Around 8, 9, 10 assists should be the standard for Marcus Smart. That should be what he averages in this on this offense.
Yeah, and we're about to enter like the second decade of this debate at this point. It's kind of crazy. Like, so much of the offense he's able to generate and the leverage on that end comes from the fact that he's super aggressive taking threes. He'll get downhill even though he's not the crafty. Well, he is a crafty finisher. He's not the most consistent finisher. He just sort of creates positioning down low in these weird positions. And that's where he makes himself a little bit unpredictable to defenses, I think, sometimes. You end up having a game like this where he's finishing left side and he's hitting threes. And it's like, oh, do we all of a sudden have to count for Smart? And then I think that's where he creates with some shot fakes and all the different stuff he does. He's gotten in the post more this year, which I've loved. And so you always have to take a little bit of a balance with him. There's going to be the good. It's going to be the bad. Right before that alley-oop play, he had this really awkward offensive rebound where he missed inside, grabbed his own miss, and just flung it right over to Blake for two. Like, this is the Marcus experience. And you got to live with it to some degree because he's so impactful. Like, he really is. This is like 3 games in a row where he's had that crazy outlet pass after recovering a loose ball. He's just everywhere right now, and it's super impressive to watch. I know someone in the chat brought up the benching against Chicago. And was it a benching? Is the foul trouble there? I don't know how you classify it, but you brought that up and the impact that could potentially have. And that does seem to be a little bit of a line of demarcation.
He got 5th foul, but they liked what the offense looked like, what the people on the floor were giving, and he only came back in that game for defensive purposes late. With 5 minutes to go, a guy draws a 5th foul. Yeah, maybe you want to rest him for the final couple to have him for crunch time, but they didn't do that. They rested him for basically the whole game and then brought him in for a defense offense position switch. So that really was that one game where they were like, I like what Brogdon and White are giving me more. But again, with Marcus, as with so many people, sometimes it comes down to, it's almost easier to analyze than we make it. When you have players like Marcus Smart who do a lot of other things, you know, who aren't prolific scorers, oftentimes they end up being judged simply by, are they shooting well enough for all the other stuff to be able to appreciate all of the other stuff they do. When Marcus Smart shoots like he did the first month of the season, it's harder to appreciate him because he's such a, I mean, it's so bad that that's all you can really focus on. And the rest of the good doesn't necessarily outdo it. But his splits between October and November, his field goal percentage, his splits were 32-22, in the month of October. And this month, they're 46-33. That's much, 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 much better. His assist numbers are up 1 per game. So it's not like it's ridiculous. He's had that stretch recently, but the reality is, he was passing the ball fairly effectively at the beginning of the year. It's just the shooting was so bad. It's the same thing with Derek White last year. When he was shooting so bad, everyone would be like, but he does other stuff. That's great. But you can't be that bad. When you have Marcus, who's, you know, shooting more efficiently, being wise with the shots that he takes, and playing this type of basketball with the ball, he's so hugely impactful. He just can't be having those 3 for 15, 1 for 9 sort of games. He's just got to, as long as he gets out of those, he's great.
Yeah, and the most trouble this team's had so far, because they've pretty much rolled through the schedule to this point, is obviously Cleveland. And I think what Cleveland did in both of those games well is funnel the ball back towards Smart, double Tatum pretty aggressively, have their big men in the post to seal off that area and force Smart to shoot a ton of jump shots. And that's been an outcome that hasn't worked well for the Celtics going back to like the 2017 East Finals. If you go back to some of their worst games during that run, just teams really hedging and forcing the ball towards Smart so he can shoot threes. And you can just imagine in your head those crunch times where it ends up in his hands. And I've seen games in the past where he's like looking to pass because he's missing those shots, and he just ends up having to fire it up, and the defense is going, whew, like, that's what they're going to have to prevent at some point, particularly when they're shooting threes at the rate they are. I think Smart's countered it well by going in the post at times. He's become a better driver as his career has gone on, but that's what he's going to focus on in those circumstances, is creating a second level drive. And, you know, I think what this offense does well too is be able to run multiple sets if the first one fails, and they can use a full clock. That's it, right? You talked about that the other night. You don't want him shooting with 13, 14 on the clock. Yeah. If you've really got to put it up at the end, he's actually pretty good at that.
Sure. You'll
hit him at the end of the shot clock.
I love him on the post. I love him sometimes being able to use his physicality to kind of just spin his way into the lane against certain defenders. I think he recognizes those mismatches and he utilizes them. Again, he didn't do much last night.
He hit Murray pretty hard with those last night.
He got a key bucket late in the game when he's trying to kind of stave off a little Denver run where he went into the post and Murray just couldn't handle him. He was just too tough. Again, he only scored 4 points last night. I was right. You know, I had a good angle of it. Just too strong.
Great seats.
Yeah. Last night. Again, I don't roll like that. But anyway, you like that. But all in all, a great Smart game. Again, we don't have ton to talk about here because it was basically Zanis. It was basically Tatum, Smart, and I just read a comment. Tatum, Smart, and Grant sort of game. Talk about Grant tonight, Bobby. It's so funny. Every time he has one of these games, everybody's like, oh, he's getting paid. And I never know. I still don't know, but he was amazing tonight.
Yeah, he's starting to look closer to those players that are getting paid in terms of glue guys, like your Cam Johnson and some of the other guys who got extensions in that class, DeAndre Hunter. And given the way he shoots, you can almost argue he's better than some of those players at this point. And I didn't have a problem with them not extending him. Tonight's, I think, the night that made me say, all right, like you probably should have just got it done. And that's because they must have had a better idea of what he was coming in looking like than I did. I mean, what was it last year? It was just threes and versatile defense, switchability, and that was pretty much it. Now he's passing, now he's rebounding, now he's, I think, defending even more versatile between like strong guys inside and wing defenders. They moved him into the starting lineup, as Joe Mazzulla talked about last night, to guard point guards. Like
now
Ivy,
that he's starting,
like
it's
Morant.
A little bit different, right? Because if he starts and he stays there and he's, you know, kind of, again, you know, it's almost kind of like, I'm not saying he's the same type of player, but it's almost kind of like Crowder was for Phoenix, which is like, you know, does a little bit of everything for you, a little bit of everything that you need, you know, and that's kind of like Grant. And if he is a starter, you know, on a championship caliber team, it kind of changes things. It changes the perception a little bit.
Yeah. And especially when he does so many things you need, like if you lost him, imagine if he wasn't available right now, there'd be quite a few things you'd be missing. That outlet for Tatum as a shooter, a guy who can guard pretty much every position. Now that Horford, I think, is sort of, I don't want to say taking a step back, because I still think he has some great defense in him, but Grant has closed that gap, I think, in terms of like the most versatile defender on the team. And then obviously he's done some great stuff passing and rebounding too now. So he's continuing to expand his game. He didn't seem like a guy who'd be able to layer his game coming in the league. It seemed like what you saw at Tennessee was what you were going to get. But the way
in
he
fact,
just
in fact, you got something
improve.
That's totally different than the type of game he played at Tennessee, which is so weird.
Yeah. So that's
he
the question.
He was just a bulldog down low. He can't do that. He's not tall enough. It doesn't matter if he's wily or slippery or physical. He's just simply not tall enough to play that style of game in the NBA. So he had to evolve.
Yeah. And I'm talking offensive rebounding, by the way.
Right. But like he can't score like that in the NBA.
No. And I like him bringing it back at times in a game like this, particularly at least as a roller. He's worked on a screen game too. He's worked on so much. So you got to ask, what can he provide you into the future? Because that's what you're paying for.
I know, but that's the thing is, like, if you look at it, and again, I'm not comparing the players necessarily, even though we have compared them in the past because of where they were drafted. But Brandon Clark, you know, also starts for a very good team. 4 years and 52. That $13 million, I'm sure, is exactly roughly.
But he's better than Clark.
I understand, but that's exactly roughly where the Celtics would have liked. And again, you're talking about a guy. He's better than Clark, but Clark brings you different things: energy, defense, rebounding. He plays above the rim. He can't shoot it like Grant. He's not as a complete and as a refined basketball player. But in terms of value, he's valuable to that team, and he's kind of the same. I'm not comparing the styles of player. It's the same ilk. Is he the one, the two, the three, the four, the five? No, he's somewhere in that mix where he's useful. They like him. That's what they think he's worth. That's what he's worth to me. When you're in that 13, 14, 15 range, it makes sense. As soon as you start talking about 18, 19, 20, it gets to a point where it's like, I don't know, man, I might be priced out. The problem with a guy like Grant Williams is you're much worse if you don't have him, but you have to draw a line somewhere. You think they're ready to pay a guy who's a marginal starter or a guy coming off the bench $20 million as a reserve, you know, as more of a sixth man? That's a big luxury item. And especially when the tax is going to go through the roof with Tatum and Brown extensions, if you're able to hang on to both of them, that's a lot of friggin' money to pay somebody. I really think they wanted badly to get that, you know, that type of extension done. They would have loved to wrap it up, you know, whatever they got robbed, maybe a little bit more. And that would have been it. And Grant didn't want it. So now they're stuck here.
Yeah. And he understands where the league's going in terms of the cap. So let's say
money keeps going up. Any deal you sign today is a bargain in 2 years. So absolutely. Right. It's a bargain for the team.
So he understands that. And that's going to be the case he holds down is $20 million in the fourth year. It could be cheap under the new cap in 2026 or whenever that's going to be. But they're going to have to just do it, right? You can't – at this point, you're paying big tax money. You don't have another guy in this. I know we all love Hauser, but Hauser's not Grant. And then Horford's aging. So I've said this. He's your starter after Horford. And I don't know when Horford's going to be out of the league. You hope you get him back on a veteran minimum or maybe a mid-level, but – if he plays great, I don't think he's giving you a bargain. So this is going to get expensive. You're going to have to make a tough choice possibly. And Grant's a younger ascending guy. So I don't think there's any scenario where even if another team throws an offer sheet at him, and that's what's going to happen now, right? You go to free agency. There's a lot of money on the market. A team like Detroit or San Antonio or Orlando – are those teams with money, they just, it's just part of the economics of the sport. They're going to throw a huge offer sheet at him just to force the Celtics' hands. It happens all the time. So he's going to make $20 million at this point. If he does this for this whole season and he's done it the whole way so far.
There's nobody doing this that's making $20 million right now. They're not. It's just not.
Cap
unless
landscape.
Here's the thing. If Grant is the type of guy you think goes somewhere else and all of a sudden he's a 15 point per game scorer and more of a focal point of a team's offense than one of their top three or four players, absolutely he's worth 20. He's not. That's the thing. I actually think Grant Williams off the Celtics is a worse player because he might be asked to do more or some stuff that's kind of that he's out of his depth a little bit.
You might not be wrong, but we've seen this in the sport. How many guys have signed big deals that
teams are smart,
above their head?
Teams are smart, Bobby, okay? Teams, you pay that type of money to a guy who hasn't yet shown that their production matches the money you gave them. If you think their ceiling can get you there, Grant is not a ceiling guy in the sense of like, you never see him scoring 17, 18, 19, making an all-star team or something like that. I don't think anybody envisions that. They're smart. They know that that's a lot of money to pay for a role player. It's always why, like, you know, you talk about Draymond, you talk about Smart, you talk about these guys whose value to the team is probably greater than it is to other teams because he fits the role that team asks him to play. He's perfect for what they do. I think you give Grant the bag. Some team, you mentioned Detroit, gives Grant Williams a bunch of money and they're like, start and be awesome like you were in Boston. And he's like, okay. And this doesn't have the supporting cast around him. He's not going to shoot as well. He's going to be disappointing. He's going to get overwhelmed at times and people are going to be like, what did we pay this guy for? So
you might be 1,000% right, but does that mean it's not going to happen? We've seen it happen.
I'm just saying it happened. I never predict what's going to happen or not, only because it only takes one. If 29 teams think the way I'm thinking right now, but one is like, screw it, I love this guy, he's going to be great. That's all it takes. You're right.
Jordan is throwing big money at Celtics. Look out for Charlotte.
It's possible.
I'm interested to see how it's going to play out because it's directly connected to Horford.
And he's not a classic 3-and-D player. And people, I think, have to say he's not locking up threes, guys. He's not. It's not necessarily his thing. He plays against guys who are kind of taller, stretch four sort of guys. And that's more his thing. He's not locking up athletic threes. Like, you know, Grant Williams is not locking up Jason Tatum. You know what I mean? It's like,
he did a good job on Giannis and Durant.
Yeah, but I mean, they're big. Like I said, Giannis is more of a bully ball sort of guy. Jokic, they play with their physicality, you know.
Yeah. I know what's going to happen with Grant, I think.
And I like Grant a lot. I just don't know that any team is going to say, I'm giving this guy $20-plus million.
It's an interesting market this summer. I got to take a longer look at it. That should be a good article, John, for tonight. But Horford is the one I can't read. Because remember, what was it, 4 years ago now, whenever it was, Horford goes to free agency. He had been great here. He's a little bit younger, obviously. Didn't seem like there was a lot of money out there. And you're just like, he's going to take one for the team.
Horford's an all-star. Horford's a different guy. He's a different guy.
I know, but they're both free agents at the same time. So they're connected a little bit. I think we all looked at Horford in this 2-year deal he was on when he came back on in the Kemba trade and we're like, all right, when it's done, it'll be back at $2 million or something. And then, I mean, that's the ideal scenario, right? Al goes from $26 million to $2-3 million and Grant goes up to the high teens or 20 or whatever he's going to want there, because then it kind of cancels out on the books. But Horford's still at such a high level that he could almost end up being not a premium free agent, but a guy who gets mid-level attention, who could ask for $24 million or $36 million or something like that at this free. Like, don't you think Al's going to potentially have a market if he's Al again this year?
I think he might, but I mean, I don't know how much of one.
Enough to like go to the Celtics and say, I'm not taking the minimum.
Like, I don't think he comes back for the minimum, but I think, you know, kind of like a, you know, a 2-24 sort of deal, you know, might be able to get it done. But again, I don't know.
That's a big difference, though, with the tax in play, especially when you have Grant. And
it is, but you're paying him 27 now, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it comes down no matter what, but Grant's going up no matter what. I mean, the days of like hoping you can get Grant at 10 to 12 are over. Like, he's above that, no doubt.
Yeah, you know, again, you were hoping he took the sweetheart deal this offseason. He wisely didn't, and you're right. It's possible he gets paid. At the very least, where the Celtics have to get to next year is going to be higher than when they were at the beginning of this year. So no matter what, he made himself a couple of bucks, whether it's here or elsewhere. As I said, I just don't know how high they're going to be willing to go, because it's not dollar for dollar anymore. The higher you go, you're getting taxed like crazy now with this team, which is going to get extremely expensive. And don't think the Wick doesn't know that. This is why guys like Grant.
Like Brooklyn Golden State expensive.
This is why guys like Grant get let go. It's not because the team doesn't value them. It's because they're so frigging expensive. They cost twice as much as what you pay them because of the tax. And the reality is, I got to reload. This is why you need drafts and players in a pipeline. Is, yeah, I don't know if you would have drafted a player as good as Grant. Probably not, you know, considering how good he's been. But you need somebody else. You can be like, that guy's 80% of Grant and I'm going to pay him 30% of the money. So I'm going to roll with that guy. That's business. That's the business of the NBA. That's how they do it. You don't always just say, this guy's a little better, so I'm going to pay five times as much for him. You just can't do that. You have to make some hard decisions. They could be stuck with a hard decision on Grant.
And that's still that lingering Danny impact because he drafted so bad at the end. They had to make up for it with his big trades.
A couple guys in the pipeline now. You'd probably be like, Grant, take it or leave it, man. We love you. You don't. So he's got you over a barrel a little bit. You let him go and you're worse. But you should have a couple players here where you're ready to like, you let your middle class go. And you wait till these other kids get into contract years and into their whatever.
That's want to help too.
Pay your stars and you draft well. That's the key, and then make some savvy veteran signings along the way. But those guys who you pay, like I said, you're paying a lot of 20s and whatever to the Marcuses and the Derricks and the Grants. They make you so much better, but there's only so many of those guys you can have on your team. You can't give everybody 20 million. 20 million to Horford, 20 million to Marcus, 20 million to Derek White, 20 million to Grant.
You can't do it,
You can't do that in the NBA. That's the problem, I know it's only 12 or 13, 14 to Rob, but it's you're throwing lots of money at these guys. Plus, you're going to have to go 50 and 40 for Tatum and Brown.
Yeah, and they've made plenty of good moves, particularly under Stevens. Like, they're in such a better place now where you have Hauser at $6 million over 3 years, and I think Cornette signed for nothing for a couple of years here. So they're doing a little better job at the back end. Yeah. You like a guy like J.D. Davison when that's your only available asset in a draft of 50-something. Yeah. So they're doing better there. I think they're starting to focus more on that, but they're behind. So you have your White at in the teens, and you have your Brogdon on big money, and you have this backcourt that's pretty expensive. And then, Pritchard needs an extension next year and then 2 years after this. So a lot of stuff's coming up. They're going to have to, I think, kind of move and shake some stuff around if they want to keep the cost low. Who knows? We didn't think they'd go here with the tax. So maybe there's another level above this.
Like I said, it's so many guys making money here. There's a lot of guys making money here for a few years. There's no money coming off the books. Grant could be a casualty just simply because of that. That's the tough part.
Brown, look at what he could potentially. Now, we haven't seen him reach all NBA level early this year. I think that was something people assumed he could potentially do. So it's probably more of a manageable deal if he's going to come back in 2024. But there's the off chance that you sign him to that designated extension and he's a $300 million guy. Tatum with another, I don't think there's any doubt Tatum's going to be all NBA for years, forever. So he's going to be another $300 million. This is going to get insane, and it almost makes you – I know people are – one of the first comments on the show was, why did they get rid of Bol Bol? Well, now
I know people keep saying, the Golden State Warriors do it. It doesn't matter. The question is, will Wick do it? And does anybody believe he will? It's again, as Bobby said, we didn't even know whether he'd go as deep into the tax as he has simply to make the Brogdon trade and to field this lineup now. Anybody think that Wick is going to spend to the levels of the Joe Tsai's and what they're doing over in Golden State? No,
it's a different situation.
No, my friends. I'm sorry. No, they're not. I agree. If you've been on this show before, you've heard me rant. None of us got into this. Whether it was professionally or as fans, to watch billionaires stay under the tax. I don't give a crap about owners' money. I want them to spend it and spend into the tax and go friggin' broke because that's what you're supposed to do when you're an owner. Win, you're not in it to make. Yeah, I don't care about your money. We're just saying what we think is going to happen,
Yeah, so, they got to find a way to get off.
There's a lot of people selling teams right now, and there's a lot of people really interested in buying them. So I don't know. Maybe Wick cashes out. Maybe they win it all and he cashes out.
Wick's not going. I saw him courtside. He's as fired up as ever. Anyway, the only other thing I have to say about this is, I know we were all mad they avoided the tax last year, but when you start to look at this reality here, I think you could give up Bol Bol to ensure that you're able to keep this team together more sustainably long term because of the repeater tax implication that's going to come up here in the next couple of years. So I know it stinks watching Bol Bol kill it in Orlando, but is Bol Bol sitting on the bench here? Probably.
I think so. Bol Bol is giving you some decent big man depth and you feel okay. He's fourth in the league in block shots or something right now, in addition to scoring about 10 points a game. So he's been pretty good, man. No, I'm not doing this to take a dig at you. It's Bol Bol versus Cornette right now. And what kind of minutes would you feel better with? You'd probably feel better with Bol Bol minutes coming in there. But it is what it is. I want to tell you again before we
– I love Bol Bol.
Yeah, before we before we wrap again, we got to tell you about another one of our terrific sponsors here at the Garden Report. And I know a lot of you have tried it because a lot of you have messaged me to talk about it. And I know all of us are regular users of Athletic Greens, one of my favorite products we've ever had on the show. I use it daily. I like all of the benefits that it gives you, which is better gut health, more energy, mental clarity, improved, optimized immune system. For those of you out there that don't want to go shopping for a million different pills and supplements in order to figure out what it is you're supposed to put in your body to feel right, AG1 kind of does it all for you. 75 vitamins, minerals, one scoop, little cup of water, first thing in the morning, drop it and you're done. And that's it. And that's it. You've taken care of your health for the day. You don't have to go out and get a million different pills and supplements. It's diet friendly, no GMOs, no sugar. Supports better sleep quality and recovery. Really terrific. It really comes out to about $3 a day. Definitely worth it. Again, if you're interested in this type of thing and you've always wondered, like, what should I be taking on a daily basis? Again, it's all here in one shot here. So again, arm your immune system with the convenient daily nutrition, one scoop and a cup of water. That is it. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you or we're going to give you, along with Athletic Greens, a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D, 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do, and please make sure you do this, is go to athleticgreens.com/garden. Again, athleticgreens.com/garden, and pick up your free gift. Even if you are not sure you're interested, do some research on your own. See whether you might like this kind of thing. And if you do, again, it would be great for us if you went and purchased through that website, athleticgreens.com/garden, that way they know that we sent you and they're happy and we're happy and we get to keep our sponsors and keep bringing you all of this free entertainment. So, Bobby, any other thoughts? Our boy dropping 50s here isn't here tonight. But yeah, it's mostly free. Any other thoughts on tonight's game?
Nothing on tonight. Again, you're just glad you get through one like that. I'm not impressed by Detroit, so I think you're still looking for this defense to make some growth in the games ahead here. Your schedule is pretty manageable. What are they at? Six wins in a row now? So you're going to beat the Thunder on Monday, you would think, although they've been pretty scrappy. You get the Hawks on Wednesday. I'm interested to see if they're for real. I still don't have a good feel for it yet, but their defense you can take advantage of. The Pelicans still aren't a great defense. I think that might be a back-to-back, or maybe it's Friday. But this is a little stretch ahead here where you're kind of head and shoulders above these teams, and you should just be taking care of business night in, night out. I know you have your eyes on minute management. That's certainly something they're going to have to take care of here because they're getting bumps and bruises. Are you worried about Tatum's wrist at all? I know he addressed that last game.
I don't know.
That's kind of weird, right? So what he it was a small fracture in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Didn't really come up at all.
And then he fell
on
it.
I was talking to some people about this yesterday. What's like the impact of your left wrist?
I mean, on what he's doing right now, no idea from where it would be. I don't know. I mean, it's not his shooting hand, so obviously whatever. But I don't know if that affects him going to his left, if that's why he finishes right, if he's feeling discomfort there. I don't know if that impacts him at all. I guess it's not ideal, but I mean, you know, if you're going to have something going on, I guess that would be a place you'd rather have it than like a knee, an ankle, or your right wrist or right elbow or whatever it is. Whatever it is, he's the best player in basketball right now. You can't be too worried about it.
Yeah, it's just early though. So you hope this stuff doesn't build up as the schedule goes on here. And there really isn't a lot of time for rest, particularly for him. They're still pretty reliant on him, especially on a night like this. Though they've been able to get good minutes without him out there. So that's important too. It's tough to nitpick all this right now. It's a lot of great. The defense is moving in the right direction, I feel like. Rob's going to be back at some point here over the next month and a half. and you're going to be pretty formidable at that point.
Rob's a wild card. Everyone will get really mad at me, and don't. Nobody wants Rob to succeed more than I do. You know, I am obviously a huge Rob Williams guy, and I think he's such a ceiling raiser for this team, and I don't even think he scratched the surface on how good he can be. I'm just really, 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 really concerned, and
even as he progresses,
it doesn't matter. I'm just, again, I just don't know. I don't know what you see when he comes back. And I'm so nervous now that, again, you have one of these, he just needs a couple games off just for rest. It's slight discomfort. I'm so nervous about what he's going to be when he comes back. You know what I want him to be, and you know what I want to be.
It's going
to
take time. Don't start panicking when it's two games. It's not even
that. I don't care about it. I don't care about how he starts. I don't care about how he looks. All I care about is that whole, you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. He plays 15 games, 18 games, and all of a sudden you get that little flash on the Twitter from the Celtics PR, and it says, Rob Williams out tonight. Knee discomfort. And then it's like the update is like, oh, he's just managing and he's got to do it a couple of games. And I'm like, oh God,
time for calm.
I just don't know if people understand what arthritis is. Okay. And what happens when you have these knee surgeries, when you get it, it's rapid. And what you don't want to see is this another setback right away. That's why it's pins and needles for the first. You just want him to make it through the year. It's pins and needles with a guy like this, because you have these types of surgeries. You remove little bits of things, and then you've got issues with the cartilage there, and the cartilage starts to wear away. And as soon as you develop that osteoarthritis, it could be rapid onset, and then it's you're Kemba Walker tomorrow. So it's scary, scary stuff.
The way he plays.
But some people, it's not even a way you play. Some people just don't have it. They bounce back well and it's okay. The fact that he already had surgery this quick after it is scary as crap. That's what I'm worried about.
And he had a lot of issues.
And I get it, guys. You guys want somebody to hug you and hold you and tell you everything is going to be all right. That's fine. We're worried because it's uncertain. And he's already had a setback a couple of months after having the surgery. That's not great. So again, I want it to be bad, and I want him to, for all of it to be normal. So you want him to come back and just ramp up slow and stay steady the whole way through. You don't want to see more setbacks along the way and them selling us that it's all part of the process. So I'm just like this with Rob. I just want to see it. I'm going to hold my breath the rest of the year.
I think that's fair. And I obviously predicted that this would be something of a lost year for Rob just because of that weirdness around the setback. And this is the one of the hardest parts about this, John. You can't get good info on health and surgeries and injuries. It's just always the bright side, optimism. Here he comes. He's doing great. And then, like you said, the other shoe drops and it's like, And we're all kind of keeping an eye on that with Brogdon right now. And it seems like he's doing fine, but who knows? Is he back Monday? Is he back in a couple of weeks right now? We still don't have great clarity on that. I didn't see if Joe commented on that tonight. Keep an eye out for that. But you're definitely hoping to see Brogdon on Monday so you can get a feeling that he's progressing here, or at least get an indication.
I think Brogdon's going to be out the better part of a week, but I don't think that's a big deal.
All right, so you're back down. You're calm on Brogdon now.
No, but I mean, it's not calm. Hamstrings can go a bunch of different ways. He could have been out multiple weeks. He could be out a week. Day to day, it's
fast. What does tightness mean?
Nothing. That's what you feel when it grabs. It grabs and you're like, uh-oh, and that's a sign that you've strained it. Then you just never know how bad those things are. So the fact that they called it mild, great. The best thing about stuff like that is they've got a team of specialists working around the clock to get those guys right. But again, who cares if he misses 3-4 games at this point in the year? Who cares, honestly, if he misses 5, 6, 7, 8? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This stage of the year, this is where you want Malcolm Brogdon missing games.
Yeah, we haven't talked about, they're missing Brogdon right now either. So they're doing a pretty good job sustaining that.
Which is crazy because, again, I thought.
Credit to Pritchard.
That's why I flipped out watching last night's game when I joined the show, because you know, I thought those that would be a big impact. The starters came out and they just couldn't miss last night. But you saw a little bit of dip in that second unit. When Brogdon came, I was like, this is going to mess with them a little bit. Because that second unit had been drilling everybody, and Brogdon was the catalyst for all of it. That Brogdon, that Tatum and the bench lineup was just insane. And you lost something with Brogdon there. You could definitely see it. But again, Pritchard was out of his mind. He played his best game of the year. And just all of the contributions he got from everybody. You didn't see a drop last night. Tonight, you needed any viable body. So obviously it would have been nice to have him. But again, they can survive a couple more without him. So if it's even a coin flip, just keep him out, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think everybody, even in our comments on his interview yesterday, everyone's like, what do you do with Pritchard? It's good to have him here for a situation like this. They have good depth at pretty much every position, save for big. At least they have some bodies there. And they're doing a good job, I think, moving guys in. Haven't like all 15 guys on this roster done something so far?
They have.
Love Blake, but is this some real deal depth that they have?
The thing is, and again, this is how depth works. Like, when you have everybody healthy, the depth guys can do what they're supposed to do without any pressure of having to do things kind of beyond their means. But when you bump them up a level, a lot of people in the chat talking about, like, let's talk about Derek White's rough game. Yeah, when you put Derek White as basically your fourth best offensive player out there and ask him to do things on his own, as opposed to just be a spot up guy and then fill in some holes. And when people overhelp, you know, on other players, just be there to cut to the basket and to make good moves.
He is so mental out there, isn't he? Like, you just kind of see him, like, bad play. He's kind of talking to himself. He looks wicked frustrated. Sometimes you just wish you could, like, relax and move on to the next play.
He missed a bunny, you know, and he got really mad coming back down the court. But it's just, he's not that guy. He's not a guy who can be counted upon to be one of the team's top offensive players. He's a guy who's there, and, you know, what he'd been doing so far was, you know, kind of movement off the ball, finding spots, making sure he's terrific at making sure that they maintain space when he's out on the floor. Your role changes when a bunch of people are out. So you get bumped up and you're asked to do more. Everybody's asked to do more. Marcus has to shoot 17 times. It takes you out of your rhythm in terms of what you're supposed to do. But when everybody's out there, you're right. Hauser can be Hauser. White can be White. You know, all of those guys can be exactly who they are because it works, because there's other people doing all of those other things.
There were some lineups tonight that were pretty wacky. And that's, I got a little bit concerned.
And you survived them.
Of it. And they survived them, and they ended up winning this one pretty convincingly. I know it's Detroit. And Detroit really is not impressed me early this year.
It's a professional NBA basketball team you beat without four of your best players. That's pretty.
This is a lineup they ran tonight. Smart, Pritchard, Hauser, Griffin, Cornette. I couldn't believe it.
It's
so they're
crazy.
Making it work.
Bobby, you just beat a real NBA team without your second best. Arguably, if you're going to count Rob as well as your third or fourth, who knows where he factors in there. Third best, fourth best with Horford. I mean, you know, put him after Smart, fifth, seventh. Four of your top six players, you know, you didn't have tonight against a legitimate NBA team, and you beat them on the road on the second night of a back-to-back.
They're an impressive group. And like you said, a couple of years ago, we're screaming and yelling about how things go wrong every night. With this group, things go right every night. And they just put it all together. You're impressed with the coaching right now. You're impressed with the depth. You're impressed with everybody's individual growth across the board. I mean, the passing from Tatum right now, just to circle back to him to wrap the show here, is just insane. Like, I always saw it. I always was a believer that he could unlock that. But he's done it fast. And he's done it at a high, high level. Those fireballs he throws to the corner, he generated a lot of those six threes for Horford last night. In this game, he's just hitting guys again and again, then repositioning.
Yeah.
He's moving better.
The key with Tatum isn't even about getting assists. That has nothing to do with his passing. It's all about, for him, having faith that when you get rid of the ball, you might get it back, and just making the right read, not allowing yourself to get taken out by double teams, not dribbling too much and letting the defense settle and key in on you and locate everybody on the floor when everybody else is standing around. He's bought into what they're doing. He moves it fast. He moves without the ball much better than he was last year. It just creates a flow that didn't exist with this offense last year. And what's amazing is the passing is up, the assist numbers are up, and the turnovers are down. I think they're third or fourth in the league from the bottom in assists, which is unbelievable, because you'd think a team, when they start to whip the ball around and pass it more, you would turn it over more, and it's no. All of their turnovers were these live ball, messy ass, dribble into traffic and get a bunch of people slapping at the ball sort of turnovers that they were making, or getting into a tough spot and trying to pass your way out of it, but being so swarmed and overwhelmed by defenders that you would make a bad pass. That's what they were doing last year. They're doing none of that this year, which is incredible.
Yeah, and this speaks for itself. I mean, we're all watching, we're all blown away. But I'm extra impressed when I look around the league. And Horford talked about this a little bit last night. I'd recommend people go watch Horford's presser from last night, because I think he did a pretty good job explaining what's going on with the Celtics so far. But you look around the league, there's some good teams that are just in a mess right now. The Warriors, namely, you have your Mavericks who have hit a wall. Some of these contenders that you think are going to be, certainly the Heat, who I thought were wicked weird from that first game the Celtics played them in. There's just a lot of teams that are getting off to rough starts. You don't even have to mention the Lakers. There's some real disasters around the league early on that you look at and are like, I'm thrilled I'm not them. But not only are you not them, you're the opposite of those teams where everything's just hitting. You got all the answers. You're finding this flow. This is, I think, culmination of going back to when we started this podcast, and they had all these issues and they've played together for years now and they figured it out. And that playoff run last year, like, these guys still really call back to that and all the lessons that they felt. And I think the weight of those moments, all the little mistakes they made, seemed to stick with them. They found out what they need to do and what they can't do. And they've pretty much cut out all the stuff that they can't do. The turnovers, the stagnancy, over dribbling. Just everything we complained about during even that postseason run. It's all gone right now. And you hope that they can sustain it. You hope that they can be healthy. They're already having a little bit of trouble with that. And you hope that they can get back to some percentage of that defense from last year. Because again, like we said last night, I know you're thrilled with the start, John, and I am too. But at this point, anything less than a championship doesn't matter.
Anything less than a finals appearance. But I agree. I mean, it's a finals or bust team and everybody knows it. And it's hard to get there. And yeah, could they get to the conference finals and lose to a very good Milwaukee Bucks team? Maybe. But you're right. It's a get to the finals or bust sort of situation. You have the eyes on a bigger prize, which is, again, why Brogdon missing a few games early doesn't bother me, which is why some defensive letdowns early in the season doesn't bother me, which is why I don't want to see, not only do I not want to see Robert Williams until he's ready, I don't want to see Robert Williams until not only his knee is fully healthy, but he actually plays his way into off-season and training camp shape. So when he's ready to go full tilt, give him a month to get himself in shape and get ready to play so he can go out there and give you useful minutes and not be winded going up and down the court because he's trying to get in basketball shape. Take your time. Your goal is to get, I don't care where you are, you want to be as close to a full team entering the playoffs as you possibly can be and make a run. That's the goal for this team. Nothing else matters.
I agree.
Anyway, guys, back-to-backs here, so we're good, but we're back at it Monday with OKC, and then what do we got, Wednesday?
Yeah, the Hawks are on Wednesday. I'm trying to figure out when the Pelicans are. That one should be a fun one. Hawks should be a fun one, too. They always give the Celtics some trouble. It's a road
game. The
East
is fun, and generally speaking, there's a lot of fun matchups in the East.
Yeah, the Pelicans are Friday, so the back-to-backs are done for a little while here.
Yep.
Which is good. Dallas coming to town later in the month, too, day before Thanksgiving. There's some really good Chicago rematch. A lot of good stuff coming up after that Thunder one, which the Thunder are seventh in defense. I don't know if you know that. They've given some teams some runs. I know they gave the Bucks a little bit of a run. I think they might have actually beaten them. Shai's playing out of his mind. I don't know what to expect from them. It's going to be interesting because I don't think they're the Pistons. Like, the Pistons are just horrendous to start this year. Like, worse offense, worse defense. Thunder, their offense isn't great. You got some guys you never heard of if you look at their lineup. But defensively, they've been scrapping and they've been sticking with some teams. So I'm interested to see how that's going to go.
No, it's good. It's fun. Fun versus Atlanta, fun at New Orleans, at Chicago. And then you got a nice little home stretch there. Dallas, Sacramento, Washington, Charlotte, Miami. Back-to-backs Miami, that kind of doubleheader with, you know, playing them here.
Will Kyrie be playing on December 4th?
You know, I don't know. There were some reports today. Saw those, right?
I mean, it's funny. Things have changed a lot in the last 2 days. I mean, when I was on the Max Pod, I said, this guy's never playing for the Nets again. Now it looks like it's pretty likely he's going to play for them again, right?
Now it's starting to look like he will play with them. So we'll see. But anyway, as we said, ton more stuff.
By the way, they're number one in defense since he left, which is crazy.
Yeah. The Kyrie on Kyrie off splits are very bad for him with Brooklyn.
Wasn't that a thing here too?
It's I just saw the number again today. It's significantly worse. There was his final year. I remember, and Jimmy and I will laugh about this the whole time. You know, everyone would point statistically, oh, net rating with him on the court versus off is so much better. You guys are stupid. But we would watch it and we're like, watch the game. That everybody plays so different when Kyrie's not on the floor. Like, yeah, he's great. He's the best player out there. But like, both when he's out there, he just choked the life out of everybody around him. He didn't make people around him better. They were so happy to not have him that they were playing better when he wasn't out there. Again, you have to feel that there's a little bit of a weight lifted when Kyrie's not out there. For those teams. And also, I mean, he's such a ball dominant player. A lot of people end up just standing around not doing anything and they feel useless. You know, you see a lot of players have that effect sometimes where they're so good, but it kind of neutralizes other people because they're just not involved enough.
And the only guy who doesn't seem to notice it's Durant, right? I think the team's done with him, but I think they're terrified of where that would lead Durant.
I think so too. So we never really know there, but we'll see with that. Again, give you guys a quick reminder again, shout out to our sponsors. Once again, Calm, really great. Calm. That's the thing you do at night, even though you can do it during the day too. But this is what you take at night, calm.com/garden, number one mental wellness app out there. You can go, listen to your sleep stories, your music, your nature sounds, whatever it is, calm.com/garden, 40% off Calm premium subscription. When you go there through calm.com/garden. And then when you wake up, what do? Boom. Scoop of AG1, Athletic Greens, cup of water, 75 vitamins and minerals. Go to athleticgreens.com/garden, a free 1-year supply, vitamin D5 free travel packs, really everything you need to get your mind and body right here at the Garden Report. Once again, Celtics win this one, fairly comfortably with a skeleton squad, 117-108. Jason Tatum goes bananas with 43 points, and he was just the man tonight. Fun game. We're back on Monday night with the full cast of characters, I believe, including Josue, Jimmy, and Sherrod Blakely. We will see you guys on Monday. Thanks a lot.